Hello, I'm Steve Lanche. This is number 0532, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0532. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet entertainment reporter Grace Randolph of Beyond the Trailer fame. Among the topics we touch on, the plethora of streaming services.
Netflix was a game changer, but unfortunately they put a big target on their back because streaming killed first DVD, then Blu-ray, which was a huge source of income for the studios. In fact, it was their biggest source of income. They lost that to streaming, but now they see a new opportunity to get that revenue source back with streaming services. So Netflix actually is a victim of its own success because they're the only streaming service which insists on not adhering to the window of release between theatrical and digital release.
Craig DeLuey is the author of Our War, a dystopian look at a United States mired in another civil war that has sibling child soldiers fighting on both sides of the battle.
Indianapolis is under siege by right-wing militias. The police department has allied itself with new left-wing militias inside the city. I found it fascinating that these kids were drawn into a conflict they didn't really understand, but they came to understand it on their terms, where they found belonging and family with the militias that they belong to.
Dr. Mike Merrill, author of Why Do People Act That Way?, on why people enjoy being scared.
We know how it's going to resolve before we get into it. Scare houses, horror movies, we know we're not going to be splattered with blood. Nobody's actually going to reach out and touch. We're not in actual danger. So a part of our brain knows that. So the startle reflex, or the feeling of fear, which generates amazing amounts of adrenaline, which is a very pleasurable feeling, is something that we look forward to and in fact inflict on ourselves because we know how it's going to resolve.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0532, was Emmy Award-winning sports broadcaster Steve Lancier, who is currently working as a broadcast consultant. Steve has almost 50 years of experience in the industry as a broadcasting producer in the sports field. I had the pleasure and honor of working with Steve many years ago, back in the day when we both worked in local television, and Steve was an all-around sweetheart of a guy, and so was his wife, a lovely family indeed. Thank you very much, Steve, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A British man who tried to have sex with a traffic cone inside a train station elevator steered clear of jail when a judge sentenced him to a drug rehab program. Back on April 14th, two workers at a station in Greater Manchester observed 48-year-old Trevor Smith thrusting his hips as he sat on the elevator floor with his pants and underwear pulled down. Smith told cops, who discovered him atop the cone with the residue of white powder on his face, that his trousers had simply fallen down. Said one of the workers at Smith's recent trial, "I believe he was trying to have sex with the cone. I was in complete shock. I have not seen anything like that in all my time working on the railways." You know, I'm kind of curious to know which end of the cone he was using. Anyway, one of the men said Smith was clearly under the influence of drugs at the time. Smith told investigators that he spent the hours leading up to the incident boozing it up while watching soccer. His friends thought he was getting down, so they gave him a substance he believed to be cocaine to perk him up. What are friends for, huh? Police found him with a bag of narcotics and arrested him on suspicion of a drug offense. He has 8 previous convictions, including 2 for public sex acts. Back in 2012, a female neighbor saw him performing a sex act naked while on all fours on the roof of a kitchen. He received a conditional discharge, but was arrested again 3 years later after being found performing an indecent act in a car. When asked to stop by a passerby, Smith refused and continued to pleasure himself for up to 40 minutes. Wow. I hope the seats were Scotch-guarded. On Thursday, Judge Martin Walsh let Smith off. I said let Smith off. With a suspended sentence and ordered him to take part in a drug rehab program for up to 30 weeks. Thankfully, no members of the public witnessed the disgusting behavior that was taking place, the judge told him. Any decent members of the community who might have witnessed the offense would have been utterly appalled. Hey, aren't the railway workers also members of the community? It's not like they can unsee it. And these are the guys who have to work regularly with traffic cones. That's just PTSD waiting to happen. Anyway, a Texas teen was able to hide out in a Walmart in Corsicana for more than half a week without anyone forcing him to roll back or roll out. The 14-year-old was able to spend 4 days in the Walmart without being detected after building himself 2 hiding spaces. He put one in the baby aisle and the other hideout was behind stacks of paper towels and toilet paper. The boy was able to survive off of food he stole from the store and guzzled juice via a hole he cracked in the back wall of the drink aisle. He even had a makeshift bed and a fish from the pet department. In order to avoid being noticed when he was in plain sight, the boy would change his clothes periodically. He also wore diapers to avoid using the restroom at the store. Trash eventually led to the boy being discovered, but he was released into the custody of relatives, and Walmart does not plan to file charges. Okay, so much to unwrap here. First of all, like so many Walmart stores in the U.S., this one in Corsicana is open 24 hours a day, so why did he feel the need to wear a diaper rather than just go to the public washroom? And how often did he change that diaper? Which brings us to the next point. He was found out because he left trash everywhere. Does that include his diaper? And don't you find it ironic that he chose to wear a diaper, but one of his 2 hiding places was behind stacks of toilet paper? Also, he still found it necessary to get a pet fish. Definitely time for a checkup from the neck up in this case. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, troopers from the Michigan State Police rushed to a house in Alpena on a report of a home invasion, but they didn't find any evidence of a break-in. 46-year-old Michelle Idalski and 48-year-old Stephen Tucker told the troopers they even had security camera footage of the intruders, a man and a woman. The troopers watched the offered video, and sure enough, they could see the 2 people that the couple was referring to. The people on the video were Idalski and Tucker themselves. Troopers say the couple was high on meth, and they were arrested after their stash was found. "That's what meth will do to you," said Sergeant Chris Wickland. Well, let's look at the bright side of this story, shall we? At least the couple didn't get into a shootout with the intruders. You know, even though they were arrested, do you think they still have to pick the intruders out of a lineup? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Grace Randolph is probably the most successful female movie critic and entertainment reporter in the business. She is the creator of YouTube's Beyond the Trailer, which has over 840,000 subscribers and over 660 million views. She is known as the queen of movie reviews, and she's also a Rotten Tomato critic. Grace joins us via Skype from New York City. Hi, Grace.
Peter, thank you for such a lovely introduction.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, I'm excited.
Now, I want to talk to you about some of the trends out there that's happening in the world of movies. And one of them is the fact that there's a lot of streaming going on now. You have movies that are coming out just for a limited release, and then they go directly to Netflix. In other words, some of the movies that are promoted and produced by Netflix. How do you feel about the whole streaming situation of recent movies?
Well, there's definitely a lot happening in the space because of streaming. Netflix was a game changer, but unfortunately they put a big target on their back. Because streaming killed, you know, first VHS, then Blu-ray sales, DVD, then Blu-ray, which was a huge source of income for the studios. In fact, it was their biggest source of income. They lost that to streaming, but now they see a new opportunity to get that revenue source back with streaming services. So Netflix actually is a victim of its own success because they're the only streaming service which insists on not adhering to the window of release between theatrical and digital release. Are you familiar with that?
Absolutely, yes.
Right? Yeah. So like anyone who covers the entertainment industry knows, and even a lot of savvy moviegoers, that you're supposed to be, I think now it's like a 3-month window still, right?
Right.
But Netflix feels that they owe it to their customers to get them the content as soon as possible. So they'll only do less than a month. And so no theaters will play their movies. But I think that Netflix is doing some really interesting stuff of making their theatrical releases an event. For instance, they're renting at the Belasco Theater for The Irishman, an actual Broadway theater, and will play the movie like a Broadway show with only one showing a day in the evening and matinees on weekends. I'm going to go to that. I've already seen the movie, but I want to experience this.
Well, speaking of the movie The Irishman, there's some interesting technology in that movie when it comes to the ages of the characters.
Yes, fascinating. You know, well, when I covered The Irishman, I talked about the fact that it's ironic that Robert De Niro got his start playing a young Marlon Brando. But today, Marlon Brando could do that himself. Because, you know, you have Gemini Man as well. I thought Gemini Man was a little more successful. But it certainly, you know, it does allow these actors to play themselves throughout their characters' lives.
Now, you mentioned Netflix, and I just want to mention that just recently Netflix announced plans to raise $2 billion for general corporate purposes, which which they say may include content acquisitions, production, and development of new projects. Is Netflix cornering itself or boxing itself into a corner because it seems to be that everyone else has jumped on the streaming bandwagon with Disney and Apple and all the others, that they're fighting a war against the natural producers of content?
Oh, totally. I like the way they earmarked that money. They're like, basically, we're going to do it with it, whatever we want. You know, don't ask. But I think that, yes, you know, they benefited from being the only game in town for a while. And I think they'll continue to benefit from that. I think they're still the Coke of streaming. But, of course, they were able to have everyone else's content. In fact, Disney was a huge supplier of content to Netflix. But now everyone's taking it back. They lost Friends. They lost The Office. So that's a major problem for them. So I think that it's going to be you're not only looking at a content war, but you're also looking at a talent war, which is producing some amazing paychecks for people. And also, I think getting some projects greenlit that maybe otherwise wouldn't be greenlit. You know, we're in an age of, indulging auteurs just for the sake of getting them to work with you.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I believe that what makes streaming so interesting is it harkens back to a previous time, and I'm going back to the 30s and 40s when the stars of the movies weren't necessarily the stars, but they were the writers and the directors. That was what was driving the movie industry back then during the post-war, pre-war time. And it seems to be that that's what's happening when it comes to streaming services. It's the writers and producers who are coming together and putting and having the freedom to do what they want. And that's drawing the actors to it. And it's like what was once the golden age of films is now the golden age of streaming films.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think we're definitely getting some gems out of it, but we're also getting, some, let's just say, non-gems. I think that it's incredibly exciting to have that kind of artistic freedom, but at the same time, a huge paycheck that goes with it. I mean, there's no downside for talent. Right? I mean, like, for instance, The Laundromat just came out on Netflix, and I feel that's pretty much unwatchable. And it's a Steven Soderbergh movie. But, you know, Megan Allison ran Annapurna Pictures that way, where she was just giving people blank checks. And that worked for her for a period of time. But eventually, you know, she just wasn't seeing the results she needed to because, you know, I think artists benefit from some oversight. What do you think?
Well, do you think I'm thinking what you mentioned, some not so great films, some duds out there. I think that's kind of refreshing that you see somebody swing and miss a little bit, because I find what part of the problem is with theatrical releases is that the movie companies are so interested in getting tentpole films. They want a film that comes out that can produce three or four sequels as opposed to original stories. There's just no original stories on film anymore.
I think that's a fantastic counterpoint. And you see, that's exactly what Scorsese and Coppola are talking about right now. Kind of like a factorization of movies, you know, like Henry Ford's assembly line rather than any artistry. You know, Ford v. Ferrari's coming out, and you could say to some degree, that's very much a movie about the artist versus the businessman. And you could almost say that Ford is Hollywood and Ferrari is the independent film community, right?
Right.
But... yeah, I think that the problem is, I think that movie theaters need to be held more accountable for what they bring to the equation, because movie theaters aren't working hard enough, I think, to make an experience worth paying for with people talking on their phones. Because I think people want to still go to the movies, to be honest with you. And I think they would go to see a smaller film, for instance, Parasite, selling out everywhere. And that's not even that's a foreign language film.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you mentioned Scorsese and what he had said recently. How do you feel about him going after Marvel?
I think he went after comic book movies in general, and then it became more specific to Marvel. Well, first of all, I think that people have had enough of Marvel's, in the industry, have had enough of Marvel's dominance. I think they feel it's gone too far, and so I think you're starting to see some pushback. A friend of mine, actually, I was talking to her the other day, and she likened it to radio DJs turning on boy bands and just not wanting to play their music anymore. And so that really, you know, ended that movement. I don't know if they'll be able to bring down Marvel, but they might be able to ding it just a little bit. Hmm. But I thought James Gunn, of all people, interestingly enough, I had some problems with the jokes that he made, but I thought he had a very good counterpoint where he said that, you know, people complained about gangster movies. They complained about Westerns. And that's the comic book movie is that version today.
Now, getting back to streaming services, you mentioned we talked about Netflix a little while ago, and they're getting a lot more competition out there. The cord cutters wanted to cut their cable cord and cut their cable bills. But is it problematic? I mean, can anybody afford all of the streaming services if they wanted to, or is it becoming too much of a situation?
Yeah, no way. I mean, Disney's already bundling. You know, you can get Hulu, ESPN, and Disney Plus. They haven't made that package available yet, but that's supposed to be something that will be available, I'm guessing, when they launch. Although they are getting an awful lot of people to sign up just for Disney Plus, so maybe it's something you can add on when it becomes available. But I believe I saw an article in the Hollywood Reporter which talked about that really five would probably be as much as people were willing to pay for. So it's a race to be one of those five. I think Disney Plus and Netflix are pretty much guaranteed to be two of those, maybe three to five. But you're going to be leading to bundles that are very similar to what cable is today. And I think channels will go away, and it'll just become a bunch of streaming services.
Well, interesting turn for the future. Now, I've got just about a minute left, but I could talk to you all day. But rather
I'm having fun talking to you, Peter.
But rather than doing that, I want to talk a little bit about you and Beyond the Trailer. Tell us about Beyond the Trailer, how that started, and how it became so big. Congratulations, first of all, on that.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'm always trying to stay ahead of the curve, and always, you know, one of my favorite sayings is evolve or die. So I'm always trying to, you know, do something interesting and, as I said, be a little ahead of the curve. And I really like being a leader of what I feel is the discussion. But I do feel very much it's a discussion with my viewers. I'm very active on social media, and I cover a lot about the entertainment industry. And I think one of the things that I benefit from is a freedom of voice. You know, you talking about that artistically, Well, from like a journalism standpoint, since I don't have any oversight, so many companies today are owned by someone who produces entertainment content, and they don't want anyone speaking ill of it. And even what you and I wouldn't perceive as ill of it, but what they would be perceived as ill from a corporate standpoint. For instance, at one point in my career, I wanted to make a video about the ups and downs of Colin Farrell's career. And I love Colin Farrell. He's actually one of the nicest people you can interview on the red carpet, and I think he's very talented. But the person I had to get it was going to be a collaboration, so I had to get someone's approval to do it. And they said, well, we don't really want to upset Colin Farrell. And I was like, well, Colin Farrell knows he's had ups and downs. This isn't news to him, and right now he's on it up, so he should be thrilled. And they just would not allow that kind of piece to be done.
Mm. Fascinating stuff. People can find out more information by going to your website, going to your YouTube page, which is Beyond the Trailer. Grace, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. We'd love to have you on again.
Oh, I would love to be back. I had a lot of fun talking to you, Peter. I thought that we had some really good agreements, but also great counterpoints, and I love that.
I love that, too. Movie critic and entertainment reporter Grace Randolph. Check her out on YouTube. You can find her page by going to Beyond the Trailer, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0532, and you'll find links to Grace's YouTube page. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Our War, plus we'll also talk to Dr. Mike Merrill about why we like to get scared. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Let's get back to the stuff. A 24-year-old woman who loves giraffes was kicked in the face after she entered the giraffe enclosure at the Henry Villis Zoo in Madison, Wisconsin. Amanda Hall climbed into the exhibit so she could get up close and personal with a 2-year-old giraffe named Wally. The 12-foot-tall animal first licked Hall, and then he booted her in the face. Hall sustained non-life-threatening injuries, and Wally was not harmed. Said zoo curator Jeff Stafford, "Imagine if that animal came into your house. How would you feel about that? You would probably feel nervous and excited, so an animal is going to have a similar experience, have a similar response. Be a little nervous and excited, and that is probably what happened in this case." Well, first of all, I do have high ceilings at my home, but I still don't think my house can handle a giraffe. Anyway, Hall was cited for harassment of zoo animals, an offense that carries a fine of $686. Things could have been much worse for Hall because giraffes are capable of delivering blows that can kill lions. You know, I've never been a fan of zoos because I don't see why these animals should be taken out of their environments to be caged and fenced in for our amusement. But we're hearing more and more of these stories where the fences keep the animals in, but for some reason don't keep the humans out. And here's another story of people who, in this case, think that they're around animals that they shouldn't be. A pet cafe in China, where the owner has dyed dogs to look like pandas, is drawing controversy. Oh, really? Yes, I said. The Chinese Panda Cafe, and I'm doing air quotes as I say that, features dogs of the Chow Chow breed. The dog's fur has been dyed black and white to resemble giant panda cubs. Local television footage showed six animals that resembled the endangered species. The cafe's owner has downplayed the issue of dyeing the fur of the animals. The panda, as you may know, is a protected species in China, and the animals are occasionally gifted to foreign countries as part of China's diplomatic initiatives. And yes, they're put in zoos. How bad is the coffee in this place if they have to paint dogs to look like pandas? That's what I want to know. A Michigan woman who tried to use a shotgun to make a point during a family argument ended up shooting herself in the face. After grabbing the gun, the Fremont Township woman slammed its butt end onto the floor, causing the gun to go off and fire into her face. When police arrived, they found the 51-year-old with a facial wound. She reportedly told officers that she wanted to use the firearm to make a point. The woman was taken to St. Mary's of Michigan in Saginaw, and she is expected to make a full recovery. Michigan police will continue to investigate the incident, but no charges have been filed at this time. Well, I guess because she made her point. Okay, point taken. I'm not going to say anything about gun laws. I don't think I have to. Like I said, point taken. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Swansboro, North Carolina man has been arrested and accused of stealing a safe from a drugstore. But this guy is no Danny Ocean. Police said 22-year-old Ryan James Mullins was dragging the safe when he was caught after an early morning break-in at the store. At 7:30 a.m., a Swansboro police officer pulled out in front of Mullins and saw in his rearview mirror that there was something swinging behind Mullins' vehicle. The police officer pulled over to let Mullins pass because why wouldn't you pass a police car when you are dragging a safe behind your vehicle? And that's when the police officer saw the safe being dragged. The officer immediately pulled Mullins over. Mullins is charged with safe cracking, breaking and entering, larceny after breaking and entering, possession of stolen goods, trafficking in opium and heroin, and several traffic violations. Okay, let's be honest here. The first charge I mentioned was safe cracking. Now, when you think about it, he didn't really crack open the safe, did he? He stole it, but he didn't get into it. He dragged it a few blocks, but anyway. Public Safety Chief Bob Ritchie said the safe was about 8 feet tall and about 2 feet deep and was used to hold medications. Ritchie said investigators think Mullins was trying to get controlled substances that were in the safe. Reminds me of those old PSAs in the 80s. Let me paraphrase. This is Ryan James Mullins' brain. This is his brain on drugs. Any questions? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Craig DeLuey is the author of a dystopian thriller called Our War. It's a story that features a U.S. impeached president who refuses to leave office, a civil war, and a brother and sister child soldiers fighting on opposite sides of the battle. Craig joins us via Skype from Calgary. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Considering the image I just mentioned of your book, Our War, the first question I have to ask is, when did you start writing this?
I started writing it in 2017, finished it in 2018, and then it was published this year.
The reason why I ask is I'm just wondering how much of what's been going on in the news, especially in the United States, was the impetus or affected your writing of this book?
Well, I didn't want to specifically write a Romano Clef, which is a story set in today's world, but with names changed. I didn't want it to be that on the nose because I didn't want to date it, and I wanted to get to core concepts of and themes of polarization and tribalization in the United States and what the consequences of that might be. That being said, it ended up being sort of somewhat prescient when I was writing it, but now it really feels torn from today's headlines, from the impeachment to the right-wing militias threatening civil war and calling it a soft coup by the deep state, and even the president himself indirectly threatening civil war. So it's starting to feel kind of weird, actually. And I hope the book stays fiction.
Well, one of the things I often ask authors who write dystopian novels is, how optimistic of a person are you generally?
Well, I like to call myself a realist. I do a realist with hope. You know, realists do hope, although they, because they're realistic, they kind of see things as they are based on the facts instead of wishful thinking. So I think we live in, what the proverbial Chinese curse calls strange times.
Yes. Well, I mentioned a little bit about what the book was about, but go into it a little deeper. Describe where the story tells and specifically about this brother and sister child soldiers.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to write a story that wasn't global but more local. So I set the story in Indianapolis. The war, as I imagine it, is more would roll out more like the Bosnian War in the 90s than the last American Civil War in the 1860s, where you have more rural versus city. And so Indianapolis is under siege by right-wing militias. The police department has allied itself with new left-wing militias inside the city. And this is the backdrop for the war where we find our characters. This is the stage for them. And so the two of the protagonists are, as you said, child soldiers. I was influenced by books like Beasts of No Nation and the Netflix adaptation. I found it fascinating that these kids were drawn into a conflict they didn't really understand, but they came to understand it on their terms, where they found belonging and family with the militias that they belong to. So you have these two kids, their brother and sister. One ends up fighting with a right-wing militia that is, and the sister ends up fighting with a left-wing militia. And those militias embody the two core concepts of the two different mindsets that are at odds in this novel. On the left-wing side, the Free Women Militia that Hannah ends up joining is very collaborative. Everything is owned in common. Everything is about the group. And then on the and there's a lot of warmth and family and love in that. And then on the other side, the Alex ends up with a right-wing militia, which is more based on an idea of this is a dog-eat-dog world and everybody is in competition and you have to be tough and stand up and don't rely on anybody but yourself. And so you had these ideas that these kids are exposed to these core cultures in these two different militias. And then otherwise we have several other characters, major characters, where all these people end up, their paths end up crossing in the book. And one of them is a UNICEF worker who comes to Indianapolis to evaluate the needs of the city's children for humanitarian aid. And she ends up discovering the use of child soldiers and wants to put a stop to it. And then there's a local journalist named Aubrey who discovers the use of child soldiers, and she wants to expose it at great risk to herself. And then there's Mitch, who's a sergeant in a right-wing militia, who is Alex's commander. And from him, we get the mindset of the people who started this war and why they're doing it and what they're hoping to accomplish. And he's conflicted because he's starting to see more and more the humanity of the people he has come to hate all these years.
Well,
that's our cast.
To use a term that is a lightning rod in media these days, are there good people on both sides?
Oh, well, of course, when you look at it being a spectrum, then again, I think that when you say that, when someone says that, they can fall into the trap of false equivalency. I do not think that For example, a neo-Nazi is equivalent to someone who's opposing neo-Nazis, the Antifa. I do not believe that at all. I think that, but when I look at conservatives, I think the conservative and the liberal mindset both have something to offer the country, and it is the conflict between these ideas that can result in good government and a good society. It's when things go to the extremes, which has been an unfortunate trend, particularly on the right wing in the United States in recent years, where you have the country going so far to the right that it gets pretty extreme, and that's a scary development and really sets the stage for this. Whereas 10 years, if I said, you know, civil war in America, people would be like, oh wow, that sounds like an interesting science fiction idea. And now if I say it, it's like, yeah, I read an article in the New York Times last week wondering, you know, talking about just that, and the president tweeted about it. I mean, it's a much different story now, particularly with Trump in office, than where we were 10 years ago.
When we talk about child soldiers, just how old are this brother and sister in your book, Our War?
Well, Hannah's almost 11, and Alex is 14.
Did you, at any time when writing this story, give any thought or idea as to different ages, or how did you come across these two ages, not younger, not older?
Well, I wanted the kids to have agency, so they needed to be old enough for that, but they had to be young enough to be naive and learning about the world and not really understanding the war that they're being given and that they're being forced to grow up in.
Now that you finished the book and you're doing press for the book, so it's out there, what's the reaction been? And has the reaction, any of the reactions, been different to what you were thinking about while you were writing it?
Well, when you write it's not a pox on both your houses type of novel. As the author, I try and keep myself out of it as much as possible. I have very strong personal political beliefs, but I didn't think anybody was interested in those. My friends might be, but not my readers. And so I wanted to present characters across a spectrum of political belief who would present their beliefs, and you could agree or not agree. Now, when you do a novel like that, there are people who have treasured mythologies, and if anything interrupts that, they get very upset. And so I was expecting to catch heat maybe from both sides, but actually remarkably that hasn't happened, which I'm happy about, because that was the intent. I was presenting a story and not preaching a sermon. And so that readers took me at my word, I'm actually really happy about. But I was surprised, and the reviews have been fantastic. And I think people think that this is a novel for its time, and that it has an importance to it, which I was really gratified to hear from a lot of readers. But I did expect to get dinged more by people on an extreme one side or the other who don't like to see their mythologies criticized, and that they would I would end up getting dinged just for that. But it happened in one or two cases, but I thought it was going to be bigger than that. So I was very happy about that.
You're living in Calgary. I see in your bio you're listed as an American Canadian. Are you someone who came to Canada?
Yeah, that's right. I grew up in New Jersey. I lived in New York for 7 years and left soon after the World Trade Center attacks. I was married to a Canadian woman, and we moved here. And I've been here ever since. And I really love living in Canada, and I've come to consider this home. It's just that, you know, you never forget the country you came from. And so I follow U.S. politics quite a bit.
Does it give you a different perspective living in Canada and being one step removed from the United States as you watch what unfolds in the United States, and also as you watch what unfolds here in Canada? Does it give you a different perspective knowing both systems so well?
Yeah, maybe just like more of a global perspective, because I follow both. Yeah, I wouldn't say terribly different. I'm just more politically aware because I have an interest and I follow it. And so that I would say that would give me a more of a distinguishing perspective than anything else. But when I look at Canada, you know, it's just I see Unfortunately, there have been certain tactics used in the politics in the U.S. that have achieved a level of success that now that some Canadian politicians are trying to imitate it. And I find that extremely alarming.
And
we do not need the politics of division. I think Canada is a great society and country, and its benefit is its unity and not exploiting division.
Well, the book is a fascinating dystopian thriller called Our War. We all hope, of course, that it's just nothing but a great read and is not indicative of what might happen.
Yeah, I hope it stays fiction.
Exactly. I thank you very much, Craig, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thanks very much. It was great talking to you.
Craig DeLuey, author of Our War. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is number 0532, and you'll find links to Craig's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
On the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about why people like to get scared. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. And I have one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and on Spotify. You can subscribe to the show both ways. Okay, 48-year-old Jennifer Collin Hall of Tony, Alabama, was distraught when she called the Limestone County Sheriff's Office dispatch on October the 2nd, so officers were sent to call on her. The officers first approached Hall's landlord, who told them that she had been acting strangely and hinted that she might be on drugs. When the officers spoke to Hall, she produced a clear bag from a baby wipes container and told them, "I want this dope tested," because she feared the methamphetamines in the bag had possibly been tainted with another drug. Asked if she had consumed the drugs, Hall said she had, but couldn't remember when. She was arrested and charged with possession of a controlled substance and was held at the Limestone County Jail. You know, that's what every drug user should do before they take a hit. Call the police to accurately assess the quality and purity of their stash. I'm sure the cops will be quite helpful. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Whether it's watching a horror movie or going to a haunted house, there are a lot of people who actually enjoy being scared out of their wits. What's up with that, and is it normal? Dr. Mike Merrill is the author of Why Do People Act That Way, and What Can I Do About It? He joins us on the line from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So,
very glad to be here.
We are in the midst of the Halloween season. It's not only is it a time when people go trick-or-treating, it's also a time when new movies come out that are in the horror genre. It's a time when people like to get scared for one reason or another. Why is that? And is it healthy?
It's interesting that you put the emotion of liking something, affection or desire or pleasure or something like that, alongside the emotion of fear or startle or fright or terror. People like to be scared, which is a very interesting mix of two spices in our lives, if you will, because there is a singular factor of being scared when something that is destabilizing, it is creating insecurity for us, that happens. But we can sometimes choose that exact emotion which we enjoy. We like that feeling. Question is why? And it's partly because we know how it's going to resolve before we get into it. Scare houses, horror movies, we know we're not going to be splattered with blood. Nobody's actually going to reach out and touch. We're not in actual danger. So a part of our brain knows that. So the startle reflex or the feeling of fear, which generates amazing amounts of adrenaline, which is a very pleasurable feeling, is something that we look forward to and, in fact, inflict on ourselves because we know how it's going to resolve. Now, in a true frightening situation, a gunman has come into the mall, you're shopping, bullets are fired. That is not pleasurable, and we do not seek that. It is normal to feel insecure or unsafe in that kind of environment. But the reason why Halloween and Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day and Thanksgiving when families get together has that mystique of fear that surrounds those events is we know basically how they're going to resolve and we look forward to that. That's very normal.
Now, what about the ages of somebody who likes to be scared? Does one have to concern themselves if you have children, whether you show them scary movies or not?
The answer to that has to be individualized with a general caveat. The reality is that the child's mind prior to around age 3, not an exact date, but a generalized date, prior to age 3, that child has a very hard time distinguishing between what they see and what they believe to be real. So in a 18-month-old or a 22-month-old, when someone puts a mask on, that age child no longer sees the human being underneath the mask. They only see the mask and believe that that's real. A scary situation, haunting music, somebody reaching out, a cold draft. The child has no history, no experience, no framework in which they can understand, oh, we're playing right now. This is not real. So they believe it is, and it can create a tremendous, authentic response as if they were in real danger. So that child may have a very hard time getting sleep, getting that out of their mind, or just resolving the feelings of tremendous fear that would be associated. Now, a child over the age of 3 that begins to understand underneath the mask is my dad, my mom, my brother, a neighbor, a real human being, and that person is not the mask. They're going to take the mask off. They can have fun with something frightening. Part of it is to do with how many senses of perception does one engage in creating the frightening situation. Sometimes it's simply visual. There's a mask, there's a scary image, there is some flashes of lightning or strobe lights. Just visual. But you combine that with music that has the ability to affect the audio sense, and then you also add smell, and you also add a slimy feel or a cold wind and something shaking. Now you've engaged 3, 4, 5, 6 senses, and it becomes overwhelming. Young children have a very hard time separating that from what they believe is real. older children and adults have an easier time.
So why is it that some people enjoy going to, for instance, scary movies? They know it's not real. They know it's part of fantasy. They enjoy the experience while they're watching the movie for 2 hours or whatever, but then later on might have difficulty sleeping that night.
That has to do with an interaction that occurs between the various senses. A person who's, let's say, their natural strongest sense perception is vision. They notice detail. They're very good at spotting movement, even very small movement. They have an ability to understand a great deal of color. So their visual is extremely acute, and they are highly sensitive in their visual platform. That person who also has a very active creative side of their mind, they can invent new ideas as they think about them, or a very strong memory where they relive what they have experienced previously, may have an incredibly hard time dissociating or separating themselves from something they saw hours, days, even years earlier, from how they dream about it, how they think about it, how it recovers to their mind. A person who does not have a very strong visual platform, they're not highly, they'll go to a scary movie, they remember the sounds, but that doesn't erupt later on in their life. It's unique to each person how their various senses interact with what they have experienced to that point.
Do you like scary or spooky things yourself?
I personally do not. And the reason for that is I have a very highly sensitive visual platform. Most scary movies depend on visual startle. They are gruesome images. It is extremely hard for me to get that out of my mind because I can create the images and my mind can play with them, later on twist them, distend them, recolor them. I can do that in my, I'm a graphic designer, and so I came to that because it was part of my natural makeup. But when I go to something that is really frightening, I have found by my experience, it is very hard for me to separate that out of my mind later. It is much better for me to avoid from the beginning rather than try and overcome what is there. It just is easier for me. But I'm not one for scary movies.
Very interesting conversation indeed. I've just got about a minute, but I've got to ask you a question about your book. Your book is called Why Do People Act That Way? And the subtitle is what I find interesting. And What Can I Do About It? What can we do about why some other people act that way?
When you understand the structures that go into human behavior, what I call how a person understands reality and what their part is in that reality, you now have a framework in which you are able to begin responding more accurately, more specifically to both behaviors as well as the processes that go into those behaviors because you are knowledgeable. It's like going into a dark wood. You've never been in before. You have no map. There's no pathways. That's terrifying. But if you've grown up in that wood and you know where the pathways are and you know a great deal about its outlay, that's not frightening at all. You know what to do and you know how to do it. That's what the book is about.
Dr. Mike Merrill, the book is entitled Why Do People Act That Way and What Can I Do About It? I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Dare I say, happy Halloween, sir.
Thank you so much, Peter. Good to you, too.
Dr. Mike Merrill, author of Why Do People Act That Way and What Can I Do About It? You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0532, and you'll find links to both Mike's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming up a little later on, but I've got one more Stuff File story that I want to share with you before we get to that point. A Cameron Park, California woman was arrested after she made an unusual request. According to Lincoln, California police, 37-year-old Lynette Stewart waved down one of their officers at around 11 p.m. She told him that her gas tank hit empty in the city, she was unfamiliar with the area, and she now needed help finding the vehicle again. The officer, Corporal Matt Williamson, who remembered seeing the kind of car she described six blocks away, gave Stewart and her gas can a lift to the vehicle. When Williamson checked out the status of the vehicle, he found that it had been reported stolen the day before. He then arrested Stewart immediately. A further check also showed that she was carrying. Stewart was arrested for vehicle theft and possession of meth. In an understatement, Williams said she was found to be in possession of suspected methamphetamine, and obviously narcotic use doesn't lend to good decisions. By the way, the police station was also very close, just a couple of blocks away. Williamson has been with the department for 16 years and said this is the first time anyone has led him to a stolen vehicle. You know, this woman isn't the brightest bulb, and the only reason I didn't make her the idiot of the day is because since she was carrying drugs, it is undetermined as to whether or not she was on drugs. And idiots of the day have to be stone cold sober to be idiots. Which reminds me, boys and girls, it's now time for the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
Police arrested a 36-year-old Illinois man for giving officers a fake name despite having his real name tattooed on his neck. Matthew C. Bushman of Mansfield had a warrant out for his arrest when officers booked him on October 11th for obstructing justice. A police mugshot shows the Matty B. tattoo across his throat. Police said they were investigating a forgery when Bushman gave them a false name and date of birth in an attempt to dodge a warrant. Bushman was booked into Coles County Jail. Now, why, oh why, would you even have fake ID, never mind giving it to the police, if you were wanted by the cops and you actually had your real name tattooed on your neck? And why, if you wanted to hide your identity under these circumstances, would you at the very least not own a turtleneck? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0532. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0532. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, or you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, any given this. Go ahead, try and figure that out.